In the year 1902, Rudolf Steiner made the following statement. He says, "The person who understands the sign of the times, that person cannot avoid coming to the realization that we stand in front of a new spiritual epoch, that a new turning point prepares itself, which is just as important and significant as it was at the time of Augustine, or as it was round about the 16th century. A turning point, a change in which Germany is called upon to do something quite special and great." German science has the most significant task in relationship to materialism. Only hand in hand with German science are we able to work in the correct way. End quotation. Rudolf Steiner later on indicated that, as it were, the Anthroposophical Society in its first phase had to undergo a kind of embryonical life within the Theosophical Society. Within this first phase, Anthroposophy had to fulfill its first task. Its first task was to confront the traditional ancient Oriental wisdom with the spirituality of Western civilization, which had the mystery of Golgotha at its center point. In his first lecture to the Theosophical Society, he wanted to develop what he called practical karma exercises. He wanted to confront the traditional Orientalism of the Theosophists with a new creativity. That concept of soul migration, which proceeds out of the cloudy, verschwommene aspect of the pre-ego period, he wanted to confront that with something of which went completely out of a perception of the free ego. He wanted to talk about the reincarnation of the human spirit, as opposed to the soul migration of the Orientals. He wanted to do this not in a theoretical way, but through describing concrete historical examples. West was supposed to speak through Rudolf Steiner Western occultism by the revelation of concrete historical mysteries and secrets, quite removed from the passive lack of historicity acquainted with the East. However, there were certain resistances to this, and so he could not really do what he wanted to do under the theme of practical karma exercises. Nevertheless, in the year 1924, after the Foundation Stone meeting, he crowned his life work with the fullness of his karma lectures. And when he started that, he attached what he was doing in 1924 to what he had in his mind on that evening of the 20th of October 1902, which he couldn't fulfill. And in 1924 he indicated that now, with the new esoteric feature which entered into the Anthroposophical Society after the Foundation Stone meeting, now he could completely put into realization that which he could not have done 22 years ago because of the resistances at that time. Picture on the 16th of April 1924 in Bern, he mentioned that at that time, in the German section of the Theosophical Society, there were single of the old members who began to be very, very excited, and they began to shudder the thought that I would begin my work in such an esoteric way as to talk about concrete karmic relationships. People weren't ready for it, and so the relationships made it necessary that I had to speak in a much more exoteric way than I intended to do. In the theosophical magazine Wahan, there was a report of a lecture which Rudolf Steiner gave on Sunday the 18th of October 1903 at 5:30 in the afternoon. And they quoted and they said that in this lecture, Dr. Steiner tied his concrete karmic revelations to the revelations of H.P. Blavatsky. And they quote from Rudolf Steiner's lecture. And they say the following. Rudolf Steiner says, "In the spiritual, we find the domain where the events of history first arise. Here in the spiritual, we have to look for the true cause of everything that occurs upon the earth. Here, the leading personalities of history receive their impulses and advice from the great and invisible leaders of mankind. It's only when we research those intentions which inspired the actions in history are we able to understand those facts of history which are so often unexplainable. Thus, for example, in the 15th century, there lived a Cardinal Nicholas of Foncusa, Cusanus, who had deep scientific insights. Long before Copernicus, he had recognized the double movement of the earth and taught it. This was a kind of preparation for that which Copernicus was born in 1473, in part to a generation who was much more filled with insight. The occult researcher learns that he can agree with what H.P. Blavatsky openly stated in her third volume of the Secret Doctrine, namely that Copernicus was no one other than the reincarnated Cardinal Cusa. And then the report continues that the speaker, Rudolf Steiner, gave two further examples. Again, in a lecture of the 12th of August 1924, Dr. Steiner, referring to the fact that, referred to the prescription which preceded by certain demonic powers who were fighting against these demonic powers who were under the Ahrimanic influence, were fighting against that which the Archangel Michael wanted to enter into the world. At time, whenever I wanted to express myself on these questions, it's as if the enemies of Michael came along and kept my mouth shut. However, since a subsequent time, I can now speak about these things without any hesitation. The situation now is that those demons have to keep silent, those demons which previously prevented me from expressing these esoteric things." End quotation. Now, another interesting thing is that Rudolf Risman reports about the fact that Dr. Steiner, in the year 1905, visited his father's house, and in the study room of his father there was an old bust of Hegel which Dr. Steiner wanted to see. And Risman asked the question, does that not mean that that perhaps Dr. Steiner had destiny connections to Hegel? And he says, refer to the lecture by Karl Koenig entitled 27th of February 1861 as a World Historical Date, published in the Mitteilungung number 27. Rudolf Risman continues, he says, "In those years, my mother had a very interesting chat about Caspar Hauser. Her parents were very strongly connected with Professor Daumer, of whom Rudolf Steiner mentioned in the Cycle on the Apocalypse when he said, the Professor Daumer who cannot be too highly treasured. Several years previously, Dr. Steiner said to my mother that Caspar Hauser was a versprengter Atlantier, a straggler from Atlantis. And now here's a rather interesting report from Georg Hartmann. Georg Hartmann reports that there was a play of questionnaires which came over about 100 years ago from the Anglo-Saxon lands to Central Europe. In Germany, this questionnaire was then printed and was spread about in many circles of societies. And from many personalities, there came the answers. Most of these answers are forgotten. Now, Rudolf Steiner was not a spoiler of games. And when, on the 8th of February 1892, in Weimar, he was presented with this questionnaire, it probably was in the circle of those artists and literary people who gathered together with Hans Olden. Rudolf Steiner gave the answers with a solid hand. The head of this questionnaire was the motto, "In God's place, the free human being." First question, what is your most admired quality in a man? Answer, energy. Next question, what is your most admired quality in a woman? Beauty. What is your most preferred occupation? Answer, Sinnen und Minnen. Sinnen means meditation, reflection, musing, brooding, pondering, contemplating. Sinnen and Minnen means musing and loving. What is your idea of happiness? Again, Stein answers, Sinnen and Minnen, musing and loving. Mental speaking. So we see from this that Rudolf Steiner, God bless him, when he was 21, wasn't averse to a little loving at the side. That's marvellous. Good to know that. What occupation appears to you to be the best? Answer. Every occupation in which one could zugrund gehen for with energy. Can't translate this. It could mean two things. One, it could mean ruin myself with energy. Or the other could be to get to the bottom of with energy. So I don't know which one he means here. Oscar German. Next question. Whom would you like to have been, if not yourself? Answer. Friedrich Nietzsche before his wahnsinn, before his insanity. Where would you best like to live? Where? Well, that is the answer. That's indifferent to me. When would you have most liked to have lived? Answer. In times where something is to be done. What is your idea of unhappiness? Not to know what to do. What is your main character feature? Answer. That I also don't know. Who is your preferred writer? Nietzsche, Hartmann, Hegel. Who is your preferred painter and sculptor? Rauch, Michelangelo. Who is your preferred composer, Beethoven. What is your favorite color and flower? Violet, meadow saffron. Who are your heroes in history? Attila, Napoleon I, Caesar. Who are your favorite heroines in history? Catherine of Russia. Who are your favorite characters in poetry? Prometheus. What are your most, what are your favorite names? Lieblingsnamen. Names are the favorite lieblings, that's your pets, whatever it might be. Here, Rudolf Stein answers, Radaguda. Then he says, let the women decide that. Next question. What historical characters can you not bear? Answer, the weak ones. What failings would you first excuse? Answer, all failings, when I have understood them. What are your insurmountable aversions? Pedantry and the sense for order. Of what are you most fearful of? Answer, of punctuality. What are your favorite foods and drink? Frankfurter Wurst und Cognac, black coffee. Your temperament. What's your temperament? Rudolfson answers, changeability, wandelbarkeit, inconstancy. The strange, Rudolf Steinemeyer answering, designating his own temperament as his inconstancy. Georg Hartmann continues, if one thinks about the answers of Rudolf Steiner, so you perceive that some of the questions are answered with deep earnestly, others with a fine sense of humour, and again others with a faint mockery. Let's consider some of Rudolf Steiner's answers. But the idea of happiness coincides with one's favourite occupation, and that this favourite occupation occurs in the pendulating between thinking and willing, that the formulation of this answer is taken over from the title of the complete poems of Robert Hamerling named Sinnen and Minnen, that means thinking and loving, and that this formulation of Rudolf Steiner has been lifted up to a fundamental maxim of the free human being, to the life in the love to action, and to permitting to live in the understanding of some other person's will, that reveals how a word of the poet can be ennobled out of a higher consciousness and can further be expanded. Again, in reference to another answer of Rudolf Steiner, who could deny that, taken in the main, the most unfortunate thing is for a person who does not know what to do. Stein, you have the negation of the polarity of soul forces of thinking and willing. When Rudolf Steiner was asked about his main character feature, he says, that's what I don't know. And so this question is rejected. Of course, the human being who leads his life out of the forces of his ego, he possesses no main character feature. Hence, perhaps that's why the question of his temperament was answered with the designation of one of the four temperaments. No, it's not answered with the designation of one of the four temperaments, but he answers with the statement of inconstancy. The character features and the temperament together are connected with the working together of the astral and etheric body. The person who forms the spirit self and the life spirit out of the ego, for that person, the question of character feature and temperament is meaningless. It's without significance. Then the question, whom would you rather be if not yourself? That is a question which has no really value of reality at all. One wants to try to possibly hypothetically imagine something which is impossible. However, the answer given by the spiritual researcher who has taken over in freedom the task of a leadership for mankind, Friedrich Nietzsche would have if the adversary forces hadn't beaten him down with insanity. He had the possibility of leading over the philosophical, natural, scientific, orientated thinking into a spiritual science. And so Rudolf Steiner's answer is the point, he points to a world destiny situation. And then, about the question of your favorite name, you read in chapter 7 of Rudolf Steiner's The Course of His Life, where he speaks of a person who had a very beautiful friendship relationship to him. And that person had the name of Radegunda Fehr, F-E-H-R. One of the most shattering answers in its magnitude is that which Rudolf Steiner answered to the question when it said, what failing would you first excuse? And then he answers, all failings when I have understood them. This is the answer of a free human being. And it contains again the demand to be able to understand some other person's will. Where this will is not illuminated and directed by a free grasped motive, but where a drives and desires and passions lead the person to action. So also as the motto over this questionnaire, there should stand the powerful word that points the human being to his task in the evolution of the cosmic all. Where the old cosmos dies away, there must be formed upon the earth, through the human being, the seed for a new cosmos. Out of the free impulses of the human soul, there grows a future world order. And in the highest reverence of the divine powers of primal origin, the new germinal seed word of the future should be an Gottesstelle, den freien Menschen. In place of God, the free human being. And the questionnaire which Rudolf Steiner answered in 1892, February the 8th, and Georg Hartmann's comments on it. Now we have some of the personal communications by Margarita Voloshin. She reports, I was once with the doctor. We drank coffee. He spoke of Russia. He said, the Russians live above the physical plane. The Dutchmen live beneath the physical plane. The French and Englishmen live directly upon the physical plane. In the case of the Germans, there is a transition to the Russians. Russia and the Buddhist theosophy is like fire and water. End quotation. Now, Margaret Washington says that when I told Dr. Steiner of my striving to follow the two streams, the male and the female in mankind, he nodded in an affirming way with his head. Then he asked that I should give him examples in the realm of art. I named Michelangelo as representative of the male stream and Raphael as representative of the female stream. It is correct, he said. Michelangelo would have still been able to continue in a long life to create more and more new things. Raphael, however, had to die early. He had exhausted himself in the most complete form. I suggest you proceed in your work from the Sphinx. The Sphinx has not yet been understood by anybody. The Sphinx stands at the beginning of human evolution, at the threshold before the descent of man into the world of matter. The initiated saw in the Sphinx the image of the androgen man, the androgon man, androgynous man, the bull man in whom the physical astral has the preponderance over the etheric, the lion man with whom the etheric astral has the preponderance over the physical, and the eagle man in whom the astral has the preponderance over the physical and etheric. These three kinds of being are united in the Sphinx, and the figure of the spiritual man reveals itself in the head. That's what Rudolf Steiner said. I asked him, and the other threshold, at the threshold of the ascent, does there stand the archangel? If the Sphinx stands at the descending point of evolution, does the archangel stand at the other threshold, at the threshold of the ascent? And Rudolf Steiner answers, indeed, yes. The archangel is also androgynous. The decadent form of the Sphinx is the midday woman who appears to the human being in a midday sleep when the human being receives a faint sunstroke, and because of that comes out of himself. Also, the midday woman presents the question. To Oedipus appeared, however, the correct Sphinx. The Sphinx must fall down if its image is brought towards it. And the Sphinx falls down into the soul of the human being as a soul riddle. In the archangel, there lives the principle of the life spirit, which has not yet incarnated itself upon the earth. In Tolstoy, there lived the life spirit in an indication. In occultism, Budi, life spirit, is symbolized through the image of a horse. The horse with the lifted up hoof and with the sunk down hoof. When the horse stands with all four legs upon the earth, that means that Budi has been completely developed. Dr. Steiner drew with his pencil a small horse, and underneath that he wrote Kalinka, K-A-L-I-N-K. That's how it's called in Sanskrit, he said. On the piece of paper which he gave to me, there was also a pentagon. And Rudolf Steiner said, this form man must learn to love. Man must learn to love this form of the pentagon. And now about Tolstoy, he said, on the fourth aspect, Tolstoy is rather weak, quite often foolish. Even his novels I don't particularly value. However, that which he, for example, expresses in his book about life, they are truths which are worth everything, which can be found, which are much, much more superior than anything else which can be found in the libraries of the world. In the case of Merezhkovsky, with Merezhkovsky, everything in him is permeated by the Western analytical intellect. Rudolf Steiner also spoke about a Swedish sculptor who had his studio near Göteborg. He said, it's quite interesting what he sculpts. He wants to model the forms corresponding to the seven planets, and later on present them in granite. They are not at all naturalistic. There is already something correct in it. I suggest you visit this on your way back. Margaret Wallachin reports about a conversation she had with Steiner in Dusseldorf on the 21st of April 1909. She asked him a question, and Rudolf Steiner said to her, Christ did not institute any mysteries. What he did, he renewed the ancient mysteries. A confession, the marriage contract, are they not mysteries? He answers, they are no mysteries, they are sacraments. Then she asks, what do you call the sacraments? With us, one calls that the mysterium. I don't understand it. Answer, the sacrament is an action on the physical plane which corresponds to a spiritual reality. And a mysterium? That you can't explain. You have to experience it with initiation. What kind of mysteries are contained in the Orthodox Church? Answer. In the Orthodox Church are mysteries, but different mysteries. Question. Then, does there exist in the world only one mysterium? Answer. Indeed, yes, yes, but the shadow reflections of this mysterium upon the earth can be different and can more or less correspond to reality. In the divine service of the Greek Catholic Church, there are elements of the Egyptian mysteries out of the time of their decline, and also they're entered into the divine service of the Greek Catholic Church, elements entered from the Mithras mysteries. Now, Margaret says, I have really participated in the several parts.